Matthew Leckie puts Australia into the quarterfinals.
That is a magnificent goal by Owen Mabil.
Oh, Matty Ryan, wow! Keeping it out of the top corner like Superman.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Socceroos podcast, Aussies Abroad series. My name is Chris Carulli, and today I'm joined by Socceroos centre-back Trent Sainsbury after he scored his first professional brace in Kortrijk's big derby win in Belgium over the weekend. After talking through the memorable result, Trent opens up on his journey through football so far, one that has taken him from the Central Coast all the way to the Netherlands, China, Italy, Switzerland, back to the Netherlands, and then via Israel to where he is today. We learn about the difficult times as well as some of his best moments along the way before Trent names us a dream five-a-side team that has a pretty recognisable theme to it. So without waiting any longer, let's get into the episode. All right, Trent, thanks for joining us off the back of not one, but two derby goals on the weekend. You must be on a bit of a high after that result.
Yeah, pretty chuffed. I don't normally score many goals. So to get two in one game in a big derby at home in front of a packed house, you know, it's quite a surreal feeling.
Well, it's not the first time you've scored for Kortrijk. Your first goal came in, I saw, a 5-5 draw in 2020. And then we've got to mention that goal you scored earlier this season, going on an adventure from halfway. I've seen a few clips in training of yourself, you know, bagging some free kicks and hitting the back of the net. Do you fancy yourself in the final third every now and again?
I've always said I was born a striker, but forced to defend.
When did that change?
Yeah, I love going forward and scoring goals. Obviously, I think everyone does. Everyone that's sort of has a professional footballer these days, they never really start out as a defender. You always start out as a striker or a winger or something along those lines. And you sort of drift backwards as you get older sometimes. So for me, yeah, like, you've always got that hunger and fire to score goals.
Yeah, you had Big Harry steal your thunder for a year or so when he scored all those goals from centre-back, but you've grabbed one or two from the national team since.
Yeah. I think, you know, scoring in any games, it's nice, but when you score in the big games and the ones that are important, it adds that little bit of sweetness to it.
Yeah, speaking of that, the derby you mentioned, the Southwest Flemish derby, tell us a bit about what that means.
Yeah, we haven't beaten them in a while. Zolder Waregem, we hadn't beaten them in, I think it's 3 games now, a couple draws. And there was a big hype, you know, both teams really weren't carrying that great of momentum. And then, yeah, two quick first half goals. And from then on in, it just kind of rained goals for us. And clean sheet, 5-0. Fans are going ballistic. We're celebrating pretty much from the 60th minute. It was a real feeling.
Do you feel like it's a pretty big result in the context of the season? You mentioned it had been a bit of a tough run before that.
Yeah, we hadn't won since the start. We hadn't won this year, well, if you want to say it like that. But the thing was, we had a couple rough results against us and sort of decisions, I guess you can say. So it was nice to sort of, you know, sweep the floor with them and get that high energy and momentum flowing back in our direction.
What's the hopes for the rest of the season? Are you looking to push up towards European places?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a stretch at the moment. But at the same time, you know, anything can happen in this league. Anyone can beat anyone. So that's what makes it so exciting. But we're always looking up.
Yeah, we'll take you back to when you joined the club a couple of years ago now, moving to Belgium. There's a long list, you know, of Aussies that have played in Belgium, done well, from Ocon, Skoko, all the way through to Matty Ryan, etc. Were you aware of that connection? Did you exchange stories with any of the guys before you joined?
I don't think I spoke to many people before I joined the club. I didn't have that much time left in the transfer window when it was happening. So it was kind of a little bit of a hasty decision. But at the same time, I already knew the Belgian league was strong, a very physical league. I played in Holland for a little bit. You get to see leagues which are nearby. And obviously Matty Ryan, Danny Vukovic was there at the time as well. So there was a few boys that if I needed to, I could lean on for some information.
Obviously, yeah, you're in Belgium now. We'll get back to that. But I'm keen to go through all the cities you've played in. It's been quite a journey over the last few years. So we'll start with your first stint overseas, which came after a great couple of years with the Mariners, lifting some silverware there. And then you were off to the Netherlands with Pek Zwolle 2014. I did read you were linked with
a few big clubs at the time. I think your Wikipedia page says Southampton and Middlesbrough were amongst the teams. I mean, first of all, I'm not sure if you know how much truth there was to rumours like that, but also tell us what it was like making that first jump to Europe.
Yeah, it got to a stage at the Mariners where obviously we won the league. We won the title, I guess. And I was just sort of getting frustrated in training because I felt like I couldn't progress any further. I felt like I sort of stalled a little bit. So I got a little bit angry with myself and obviously people around me because I wanted to get out at that stage. And I think the club also knew, and the staff. So when the opportunity arose, I honestly didn't think about any big clubs. Just any club that came up, I was just taking the first thing that came up, and it happened in Peckswell. So I didn't care which club it was, what paycheck I was getting. It was just all about getting over into Europe and trying to, you know, pit yourself against the European lot. So Peckswell was the first club that came up and, you know, started the journey into Europe.
So it was a tough time heading into that transfer. And then obviously you got there and you had that freak accident pretty early on too.
Yeah, I think I had a day and a half there before the first game. So I didn't even really know the guys' names because there were two centre-backs light at the time. So yeah, went into the first game. Was doing all right, and yeah, then it's around the 70th minute mark, went to sort of use my knee as an anchor and lunge onto the ground, and yeah, basically split a piece of my kneecap, and it was so cold at the time that I didn't really notice it, and then I went to play a ball and just collapsed on the floor. So it wasn't the greatest start to my European career. So I was out then for, I think, 9 months, which was really, really difficult. You know, I'm so lucky that I had my now wife there at the time, because if I didn't have her there, poor. You know, it's, you know, people talk about going into depression and that sort of stuff, but it really was in a bad way. And then, yeah, 9 months later, I came back and played my first game with the second team, and I got dragged at halftime. The coach at the time, the second team, he didn't know it was my first game back after 9 months. And he gave me the biggest tongue lashing in the change room in front of all the young boys, saying that was the worst half of football he's ever seen. And I was devastated. I was ready to quit right then and there and just head back home to Australia. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the greatest start to my European career, but I'm glad I stuck it out.
Yeah, do you feel like that, I guess, was one of the biggest obstacles you had to overcome psychologically as well, considering that coincided with that 2014 World Cup too?
Yeah, I think I was had a good sniff. I was with a good shout of going to that World Cup as well. Even if it would have been as a spare man or whatever, I think it would have been a great experience and opportunity, but it's not meant to be. Fate had another path for me to go down.
Yeah, and it was something you referred to in that interview after your 50th cap, which, you know, was a great moment and went pretty viral on social media. There was quite a response. I'm not sure if you saw Adam Gilchrist had some nice things to say about it on Twitter. Following that interview, did you feel a bit of a response? Were there some people that reached out to you?
Yeah, there was a few boys that said, "I'll give you a tissue next time, you big sook," and that sort of thing. But no, I mean, obviously, you know, to make 50 caps for your country, it's super special, especially when, you know, I'd just be happy getting one. So yeah, to stick around for 50, it's been a hell of a trip. So yeah, I mean, there was, yeah, like you said, it was a bit of an emotional mess for myself, but you know, it was all true. All the words were true. So yeah, I just wanted to leave it on the line there.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely not one to regret, no matter what the banter gets thrown around. We'll go back to your journey and moving to China, 2016 to 2018. You know, it was during that stage where there were a whole bunch of class players heading there. I saw you were a teammate of Alex Teixeira, who I recall as a Liverpool fan was heavily linked with Liverpool at the time. You would have played with and against some decent players during your time there.
Yeah, you know, no regrets either on that whatsoever. I mean, I was coming off a pretty decent Asian Cup. I had a lot of issues with my body at the time. I was still young. You know, and when you get an offer like that and it sets up your future sort of thing, you don't really want to say no to it. So, yeah, took the plunge into the deep end with that one. Didn't even know what city it was. Never heard of the club, obviously. So just went across blindfolded, basically. And then, you know, it worked out amazing. The city was really nice. My teammates are amazing. I had Ramirez from Chelsea as a roommate, you know, top boy. And like you said, we had big, big signings, 55 million euro, Tejera. We had Big Joe with some other good players as well that came in. So playing each week against like top, top strikers, you know, it was a really difficult league at the time. And for me, a massive learning experience playing against these big strikers, just their movement and, you know, the physicality of them in that league. It was a good experience.
Is there anyone in particular that stands out that you remember marking?
Yeah, one game I played against Graziano Pella. And being a little bit naive, I tried to win a ball, which I was never going to win, in front of him from a throw-in. And he basically just picked me up with one hand and I was off the floor. And he piggybacked me for about 10 metres. And the referee, I think, was in a bit of shock. He almost swallowed his whistle because the guy was so big and strong. He just carried on playing with me on his back. And then, yeah, eventually the referee blew his whistle. But that was just, I was very humbled at that stage. But it's little things like that that you kind of, you have to take on board. But yeah, it's definitely one of the guys I remember marking.
Yeah, he was still playing for Italy at the time. I mean, speaking of Italy, that's where you ended up next, with Inter Milan. That caught the eye of plenty of people. Tell us how that ended up happening.
Yeah, look, a new coach came in at China, and there was a few difficulties. He obviously didn't want me at the club. He was South Korean and he wanted to bring a South Korean centre back in. So I was getting pushed to the outer, and every player that's been in that situation knows it's not nice. You can work your ass off, but it doesn't matter what you do. It's inevitable that they're going to let you go. So at that stage, it was just about trying to find the best solution. And Inter Milan was one of the first clubs that came up. So I obviously jumped at the chance, and one of the biggest clubs in the world. So yeah, as soon as that contract came up, I was signing. No ifs or buts about it.
What were the first few sessions like? Obviously, a bit of an adjustment from China to Italy.
Yeah, well, the problem was I went from having 8 weeks off in Australia to go into the Chinese pre-season. I had 3 days of training in China and then went to Inter Milan, who obviously in mid-season. So I was really, really not in... I was in okay shape, obviously, but I was definitely not in anywhere near mid-season shape. So we did one gym session by myself and then I did a running session. And the next day I was with the team. They did a gym session in the morning and my legs were like jelly. They were wobbling all over the place. I couldn't feel them. And we went into this two against two situation and I was nowhere near it. I was way off the mark. Balls were like going under my feet. I was at one stage, I even just fell on flat on my face. The coaching staff came up to me and asked me what was going on. And I said, look, I need to sort of tear into this. I can't just go sent flat out. And they understood straight away. They were great staff for me. But yeah, once I got going and got, you know, get your head down and sort of get yourself in shape, it was an unbelievable experience for me. I learned so much there in my time there. It was incredible, especially for defenders.
Yeah, of course, with the Italian, you know, defense connection and how much they pride themselves on that. Any of the boys in particular that you got along with or that you might still be in touch with?
The one that I got along with the most, there's a couple, was probably David Santon. Obviously, he had his connection in Newcastle, so he spoke really good English. Ivan Perisic, you know, he's one of the top boys. Everyone you ask, he's one of the best people you meet in football. You know, he was great to hang around with as well. Obviously, spoke really good English. And there's a couple others, but those are probably the two that I got closest to at the time. Obviously, it's difficult with the language barrier. So the boys that do speak English, you sort of tend to hang around the most.
Yeah, handy couple of players, those two. We'll move on to Switzerland, Grasshoppers. After that, another loan deal. What was that like?
That was one of my favourite, one of the most liked times in football for myself. I actually, I'd love to go back there one day because the club, they showed a lot of faith in me at the time. They took me in when I was injured. I had the double groin surgery. There's five operations in one after that we qualified against Honduras. I was going in there again, injured, no form, no fitness, end up playing, I think, 9 or 10 games towards the end of the season. But, you know, they put me as captain in those games when we lost our captain due to injury. So it was a great bunch of boys. The city was amazing. I can't speak highly enough of the club. I loved it there, loved my time. it's probably one of the only places that I've been that I would love to settle down with my kids besides Australia.
Yeah, awesome. There you go. I'm sure people wouldn't have, I guess, picked that on paper if they're looking at your record. You mentioned that surgery that came after the Honduras game. We can revisit that briefly because you'll be heading back to Stadium Australia for, well, the second time since then. But yep. Were you playing a bit injured during that game and those playoffs?
Yeah, it was for about 6 months. I was getting injections almost fortnightly in both sides of my groin just to try and get through games. It wasn't an easy period emotionally. It was chaos for me. I couldn't sneeze, couldn't laugh, couldn't roll over in bed at night. It was super painful. Anyone that knows it that's had hernias before, it's not a pretty thing. So yeah, to try and play with it and train with it, it took a big toll. And you can see there was a picture with me and Matty Ryan after the full time against Honduras, and I think most people thought I was crying because we qualified. I was crying because I knew I could get surgery finally. That was a big thing for me to try and finally get fit and get healthy again. But yeah, it took its toll, that's for sure.
You beat me to it with that. I was about to ask you about that photo. Explains it all.
Yeah.
Well, you then had that 2018 World Cup, and I think a lot of people will remember you for that performance against France and Denmark. I guess, is that something that you feel has followed you around? Is that something people still refer to, that World Cup?
Oh, not really. I mean, people ask, obviously you went to a World Cup, what was it like? And you recount stories to them. So, I mean, little bits like that, but nothing crazy. I remember at the time it was a crazy World Cup because of the fact, obviously, it's a World Cup. I think the 2 days before the game, my wife told me she was pregnant with our first child. So I was on a massive high. France game played really well. And then the day before the Denmark game, I got told that my dog Zizu, he died. So I was in pieces the day before that game. I was absolutely shattered. Then we played okay against Denmark. And then I think going to the third game, you know, we didn't really handle it well emotionally as a team. I think also we all kind of spent, we needed to change it up, but it didn't happen. But, you know, the World Cup is the World Cup. It's such an amazing experience. So there's always going to be, you know, ups and downs and that sort of thing. But it's one that I'm never going to forget.
Yeah, sounds like a real emotional roller coaster. From there was that Dutch connection. You ended up at PSV and played some pretty huge games in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I went there for the fact that I did get to play at a big club and play Champions League, but it's probably one of those decisions that I do regret making in my career, just because of the fact that, you know, in my mind, I kind of thought I was going there to play under Bert van Marwijk because of obviously the connection, and obviously went there and, things didn't pan out the way it was going to pan out. Mark van Bommel was the coach, and I went there injured straight away. That didn't help things. And then, yeah, just couldn't find my rhythm at all, lost all confidence in training. I think everyone kind of looked at me and van Bommel as boys because he brought me in from the national team. And, then a few words in training were thrown about, and the relationship was kind of gone from there. So I knew I had to get out of there. The Champions League games at the end of the day, I think that kind of salvaged that whole experience for me. Obviously, the one against Tottenham, probably not the greatest Champions League debut, own goal, but nothing I could do about it. And then, going back to play at my old haunt in into Milan in front of the, I don't know how many people were there, but, at the San Siro is incredible.
You then got out of there, moved to Israel. Spoke to this previously on your previous appearance on the Socceroos podcast. Spoke about King Nicky and the Maccabi Haifa fans. So I won't ask you too much about that, but I think you did describe them as the best fans in the world. Are there any encounters with them or any moments from your time there that stand out in particular?
Now, there was a couple that we were playing at an away stadiums, and they basically booked out the entire stadium themselves. I don't think they left any seating to the home fans. But I think the biggest one for me was we won 5-0 in the derby at home against Hapoel Haifa, and that was, the stadium was absolutely bouncing. It was just mental, and you felt like a king in that time, in that moment. So that was probably one of the biggest memories for me of that time there was that win.
There you go. Something about 5-0 Derby victories. Hopefully you've got a few more of those coming up. In terms of, I guess, one-off trips, if we're talking on this travel theme, obviously you've traveled a lot with the Socceroos, particularly in the last few camps. You've spent a lot of time with the team being in quite strict hubs. How have you spent your time off the training pitch and out of the grounds? What do the boys get up to?
There's quite a few boys that are quite competitive when it comes to the video games. I know a lot of the boys are doing that. I'm not one of those personally. I enjoy the card games and that sort of thing. And, you know, just trying to keep up to date with the family and that sort of thing, what's going on back home in Australia and the wife and kids, wherever they are at the time. So it can get a little bit boring, I guess, but at the same time, you know, you've got 30, 40 people in camp. You can always go and have a chat and have a coffee. So keep yourself entertained, I guess.
Yeah, you're really sounding like one of the senior players of the squad with that response. The younger boys stick to the video games, eh?
Yeah.
Has that changed over the years?
I've actually never been one to play video games. I did when I was a little bit younger, but even then I just enjoy being outside and talking to people more, I guess. You know, looking at a screen all day is not exactly my cup of tea. So, but no, I enjoy other things like researching, investing, property, all that sort of stuff. Like the older I get, the more I'm interested in that sort of thing. You know, being 30 years of age with two young kids, it's kind of getting to that point now where I'm looking at, you know, what can I do for their future. So, you know, it gets a little bit different when you get a bit older.
Fair enough, mate. Have you thought about what lies ahead after football?
That's the million-dollar question. I have not. I always picture myself being involved with football still. I love the game. I'm going to play it until I can't play it no more. What do I want to do when after football? Look, hopefully I'm in a position where I don't have to worry about financially. I can just sort of pick and choose my moments and what I want to do. But at the same time as well, look, I've had my family on the road now for a long time. We've moved to a lot of different countries, experienced a lot of different cultures. So it'd be nice to have an anchor, have a hub somewhere. So I think, you know, coaching may be out of the question there. And also I've seen coaches just go absolutely bold and graze so quickly when they start. I think the stress of the job, and it's a 24/7 job. So I'm not sure if that's for me, but I never say never. I'm probably going to do my coaching badges, but after football, man, I have no idea right now. It's a little bit scary, Tom. You got to embrace it.
Yeah, exactly. You probably haven't been asked that question too many times before, and rightfully so. You've got plenty of time, plenty of years ahead of you, that's for sure. We might now go into one of our last questions, which is one that we ask a few of our guests. Awa gave us a nice and entertaining response that went down well on social media, and maybe putting you on the spot a bit. Try and name us a five-a-side of players you've played with or against.
I'm going to do it with the team and the players that I've had the most enjoyment with. I'm not just going to go for big names and that sort of stuff. I'm going to go for the players that, you know, give me the best moments in my career. So I'll go with Matty Ryan in goal. Obviously great with his feet. One of my best mates in the national team, obviously coming through the Mariners as well. So he'd be my starting goalkeeper. Patrick Svanzvijk, I'm going to have as centre back. You know, great guy. I learned so much off him. You know, one of the best characters you'll ever see in football. And then we're going to go with Tom Rogic, class act, big sexy Tom. You know, just absolute elegant feet for a big man. And you can see he's done almost 10 years at Celtic now. He's a legend there. And one of the guys that, you know, I shared a house with the Mariners for a little while there. So he'd probably go in there. Daniel McBreen is my striker. You know, bundle of energy, great laughs. What a guy. You know, someone that can always put a smile on your face and also a frown at the same time. Absolute menace to society sometimes. But yeah, great guy. How many is that? I got four.
Yeah, you got one spot free. I mean, you could throw yourself in or maybe throw in chucking a big name.
Who else we got in there? Oh, that's a tough one. I'm torn between John Hutchinson and Massimo Luongo. Hutcho was my roommate at the Mariners for a long time. You know, great guy, taught me a lot of things. in terms of being a professional. Masualongo, one of my first roommates in the national team, and I was roommates with him for a good 2-3 years there. Toss of a coin. I'll go Hutcho and just keep it Mariners select.
I was going to say, now you've got 5 from 5 Mariners players, we'll take it.
Yeah, no, I'll go Mariners select.
Nice. We can tell, yeah, they'll love it when that graphic comes out. I'm sure they'll get around it. One final question for you, Trent. As we're recording this, we've got just over a month to go until we take on Japan at Stadium Australia. You know, you've been there at the biggest moments of that stadium the last few years, Asian Cup final, Serie A Honduras. What's your message to the fans ahead of another huge night at Stadium Australia?
Yeah, look, it's a massive game for Australia, for the Socceroos, you know. And I don't think the fans realise how much of an impact they can actually have on the outcome of the game, their energy and support. You know, when we say they're the 12th man, we do mean that. So if we can have as many of you there, as loud and as vocal as possible, you know, it'll give a massive boost to the players. Bums on seats.
That's what we want. All right. Thanks, Trent. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
No worries, mate. Take it easy.
Well, there it is. You heard what Trent said. There's only a month to go until the Socceroos' massive FIFA World Cup qualifier against Japan in Sydney. So don't hesitate to grab your tickets now and be there as history is made at the famous Stadium Australia. In the meantime, we hope you enjoyed the second edition of this new series. We're always open to feedback, so don't be afraid to follow the Socceroos on social media and let us know who you would like to hear on a future episode. There's plenty more exclusive content on the way in the coming weeks as we count down to kick off on March 24. So be sure to check that out if you haven't already and stay tuned for the next Aussies Abroad podcast. Thanks for listening and goodbye for now.